All right, I don't even know how to start this, actually. All right, let's do this one second. Okay, Bryn, we're going to start, so just be ready. Okay.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Somewhere in Between, the AIT podcast brought to you by the Royal College of GPs. I'm Anthony. I'm a GP trainee in London and chair of the college's AIT committee. And we're joined again by our three co-hosts, Mira, Hatim, and Johannes. Hi,
Hi,
guys.
everyone.
Hey.
So this week's edition of the podcast is going to be bringing you a couple of stories of a trainee GP and a recently qualified first five GP who Mira and Hatim had conversations with over the last week. But before we dive into that, I guess it would just be good to hear how you guys are doing. Anything that's been on your mind over the last couple of weeks? Anything, any big moments?
So, Barno update from me. I finally let my wife cut my hair. So, progress in that point from that point of view. Now I've just got to wait for the barbers to actually open, so I can go for another visit to sort the top out. But I got her to cut my sides, and I think she did a reasonable job.
It's looking really good, Hatem. I think your wife deserves, a round of applause for that. She's done a good job.
Yep, I'm
Oh,
impressed. I'm
we can
impressed.
you can join the
Aside from that, it's also the holy month of Ramadan, so I've been fasting. So usually that means sort of I've turned into an owl basically. I'm very nocturnal. I stay up until about 4 or 5 in the morning, start my fast, and then the fast usually end around 9 p.m. But the main reason I wanted to mention this is just we'll have colleagues that are also fasting, so just keep an eye out for them. The other day when I went on to my night shift in A&E, I went into the COVID zone at 10 p.m. and my ED registrar, who was also fasting, hadn't managed to make it out of the COVID zone to break his fast. So he'd gone an extra sort of an hour and a half without breaking his fast, had managed to have some water but no food. So it's just important that I'm sure this is not an isolated case. So if you do have any colleagues, just try and let them get away for 10, 15 minutes at the right time just to open their fast, even if it means covering for them just for a little bit.
And Hatem, do you have any sort of other tips that usually help you get you through this period?
I guess the key things that I've been reading is one is it's time to focus on yourself, both mentally and physically. So try and be as healthy as you can when you are eating. And an important thing is to stay hydrated. So during that short period of time where you can eat and drink, it's important to drink lots of water. So they say up to about 2 liters of water, and you need to space it out during that time. In terms of the foods that help, it's the sort of slow burning carbohydrates that are most useful in terms of keeping you sort of satisfied throughout the day. Really just focus on yourself both mentally and spiritually and make the most of the month.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suspect it's probably a really difficult time for a lot of people when culturally you're used to being with family and relatives and friends and sort of sharing all of that together. Certainly, I know in other cultures there have been a few other religious festivals going on, and people have been sort of meeting through Zoom or using other means in which to sort of eat together or spend time together. And even birthdays as well, like aunt's grandma and things like that. We've all had to really adjust in the way we have to had to do things recently as well.
Yeah, exactly. So when it comes to the time to break your fast, you can easily do that with family over Zoom. That way you can still, have that traditional moment that you normally would have in normal circumstances.
Yeah, on a slightly less cheery note, yeah, in my husband's Jewish, and there have been a couple of like close family friends who've passed away recently. They were both not from COVID related things, just coincidentally during this time period. And they've been having some of the Jewish ceremonies around the passing of somebody on Zoom as well. And actually, people they've been saying that they've kind of found them more personable and more and enjoyed them a bit more than the traditional ceremony. It gives you a chance to speak kind of more openly with people that you might not necessarily have chatted to if you were there face to face. And yeah, so I think it's been a nice for those kind of things to continue, and for different cultural groups to be able to keep holding those important events despite everything else that's going on.
Yeah, definitely. I think we are all sort of adapting to a new way, unless you live with somebody, or you're on your own, is interacting with people in a completely and a whole new different way. This week I sort of have done, I think a lot of people have been doing sort of quizzes with their friends online or more of that sort of thing. The other thing I did was the Northwest London faculty did a social prescribing and stand-up comedy like event earlier this week, and I thought I'd join in just to see what that was about. It was actually really, really interesting. There's about 12 people who are either fully qualified GPs or trainees just playing some sort of like icebreaker games and other things just for a difference in their sort of day-to-day activity. There was a lady who's had a baby recently, so she could join in, and baby was very cute. And I think it's important to just see what your faculties may be doing around the country, because different events are being put on. I know the South London faculty are having a pub quiz this Friday, so there's lots of other things going on if you need a break from what's happening just purely work-wise. How about you, Johannes? What have you been up to these 2 weeks?
So this week's actually been quite stressful at work for me. I've started just randomly seeing a lot of complicated patients this week. And the other thing is our local population is quite heavily Spanish and Portuguese speaking. So a lot of the consultations I'm doing are through an interpreter. So the combination of having to kind of clean the room, do PPE, get an interpreter, get a chaperone, do an intimate examination, and do it all in a foreign language is quite intense. And we're not getting any extra time at the moment to do that. So that's something I'll be chatting with my colleagues about. But it's interesting. I really like having a busy half day, but a busy full day is a bit of a soul destroyer. Looking forward to the weekend, nearly there. Just keeping in touch with lots of friends. I've got some friends in Finland and some friends in Brazil who I've been talking to on the phone quite a lot. So just keeping those social connections going. It's been nice.
And have you been doing any more lock picking, Johannes?
I have been, I've been having a bit of a 90s TV binge whilst lock picking on my bed combination. So Ally McBeal, I've got a couple of different locks to practice picking with. So yeah,
making some progress. Talking of 90s binge, actually, so I've noticed that that the whole series of Scrubs is going to be available on All Four from tomorrow. And Scrubs was the reason I became a doctor, if anyone wants to know. So I'm just looking forward to going through those episodes. And at the same time, they've actually released a podcast. So the two main characters, JD and Turk, for anyone that would watch it, the two actors that play those characters have released a podcast where they have a conversation about every episode. So I'm going to watch the episode and then listen to the podcast. That's my plan for lockdown.
Taking up medicine 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing, so talking about watching things, obviously we talked a lot about Tiger King a couple of episodes ago and other things people have been binging on. I've actually seen something, I don't know if anybody else has been watching this on BBC iPlayer, about Race Around the World, Race Across the World.
I've heard of it.
It's one of those things that gives you such incredible FOMO given the current situation you're in, but also allows you to vicariously travel through the show. So it's groups of people who are, the first series is they're set off in their sort of starting Greenwich, and their aim is that they need to get all the way to Singapore, which is the furthest place you can get to from the UK without flying. So they're not allowed to fly, but they're given a budget of the airfare it would have been that day to get to Singapore, and either through hitchhiking, boats, ferries, buses, they have to get there, but it's a race. So the first team that gets there gets an amount of money. And it's been fascinating. It's also the way in which they film all these countries. It makes me really, really want to go. And now you have that sort of travel bug. And I do wonder when we'll be able to go somewhere again. But if you could, you know, in theory, travel anywhere, and where would you want to go right now?
At the minute, even just around the corner to Primrose Hill, to like one of my like favorite restaurants would be amazing. That's literally all I want at the minute. And also, you know, to be honest, it would be really like, it's coming up to our second wedding anniversary. We've been planning on going to doing a trip which would have seen us going to Thailand and probably back to Bali for a bit, which is where we had our honeymoon. So that would obviously be nice if we could have done that. But yeah, hopefully not in the not too distant future, we'll be able to at least travel down to Primrose Hill around the corner. Yeah. It would obviously be really nice to see family as well. So
I was just gonna say that I completely agree with you. Whilst I would absolutely love to be sort of in Brazil or Japan right now, I think the next goal is trying to get up to near Manchester in the northwest where our families are. So yeah, it's strange that those are the things that we start looking forward to as lockdown continues, but I guess we're all in it together.
Yeah. I guess because I think last time we did the podcast, I mentioned the repeat Eurovision Song Contest, which have been shown every Saturday on YouTube, and I have been watching them with my husband for the last couple of weeks. We had, where were we a couple of weeks ago? We were in, I can't remember where it was held, but the winner in the 2 week ago one was 1997, the last time that the UK won the Eurovision Song Contest. Last weekend was 2011 when Serbia won, and at the beginning of, before each act, they show like a postcard from whichever country is in. So actually the one last week was held in Finland, and the one before that I think was held in Ireland actually. So I guess either of those as well, seeing as I've just been looking at those for the last couple of weekends. I would definitely recommend it for anyone though. It's actually quite fun to watch it, even if you're not a massive Eurovision fan.
No, definitely. And I think the weather makes it even harder to stay indoors. So I can't imagine what it's like for people who don't have that routine of going into work. We've talked about this before, haven't we? That we are all in a relatively luckier position that we have a bit of a structure to our week, because we go in, we interact with other people, and then you come home. So it's not, although things are really different, it's not too dissimilar in terms of our working, work and staying at home pattern. How's shift work though, Hatim, at the moment? How's that during this time?
I think shift work is in some ways a blessing anyway, because it leads to a bit of variety. The difficulty is I have absolutely no idea what day of the week it is half the time.
I don't think everybody does at the moment,
So from that point of view, it can be a bit messy. But the advantage is, especially when I'm fasting, is that it means that I can alter my day, change my routine. And that's been working really well. So, and talking about going away, we had just briefly lost Johannes because he had to go and get his shopping. But now he's back. I just want to very quickly ask you, Johannes, in terms of your consultations with patients in foreign languages, how has that been in doing video or remote consulting with these patients? How have you come across that barrier?
So we haven't been doing a lot of video consultations. So actually most of the GPs in my practice are doing telephone consultations and video consults. And then they're just sending them to me for a face-to-face. So I'm only really doing foreign language things through a phone interpreter face-to-face.
I think also just we've said how much general practice has changed with, you know, adoption of new technology that either has taken a really long time for some practices to get round to doing, or maybe, you know, loopholes that have had to be looked at and things. And now with the onset of coronavirus, we can use email and we can use video consultations and things like that quite easily. But there are a few stumbling blocks. I was talking to a lady who is in her 90s on the phone the other day, and she'd received a letter from the hospital about an appointment that had been cancelled because of what's going on at the moment, but they had suggested some medication recommendations. She was like, I'll just read them down down the phone to you. And then she became so quiet. So either she'd like put me on a pillow or put a blanket over it. And obviously I couldn't say anything because she couldn't hear me. She was rattling off this letter that I couldn't hear anything about. And then subsequently she picked up the phone and we just had like a comedic back and forth. I think she must have thought I was a complete idiot by the end of it. And then she sort of hung up on me, and then I could see she'd booked an appointment for later that day requesting any other doctor. But what can you do?
I think it'd be really nice if after this is all over, if we can kind of look back and reflect on, you know, what's been good and share that between practices and work out what approaches have worked. But I think one of the nice things about GP is that there is quite a lot of freedom to try things in different ways and, you know, try different approaches. And I know that a lot of people are using AccuRx, for example, for video consultations and contacting patients. It'd be nice to compare notes on all of those things. If this ever ends, or if we ever feel like it ends.
And we've all been talking about as well, haven't we, is that although our original ideas for these podcasts had to change ever so slightly and adapt because of the emerging crisis, we are hoping to sort of talk a bit more about the other things we'd had planned. And one of them was about digital tech. I know Hatton's got an interest in that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a really good opportunity to think about how things have progressed. So when we do manage to get out of this pandemic, I think looking back and seeing how the workforce as a whole has changed and how we deliver care as a whole has changed with the role of technology will be really interesting. And I look forward to that discussion. We've had loads of ideas for the podcast, but if anyone wants us to cover anything particular when we do manage to get out of COVID-19, then feel free to get in touch with us on Twitter or by email to give us your ideas. And that would be really helpful so that we're producing content that you really want to hear.
Yeah. And I think just kind of before we move on from the kind of tech and innovation side, I think people have changed the way they're working quite dramatically. And I think this crisis has given people the permission to feel that they're able to make changes really quickly. I think before, people probably felt a bit scared. They might get told off by their CCG or told that they can't do this, can't do that. But actually people have just got on and made changes. And I hope that people continue to work in that kind of way and feel a bit more freedom and liberty to be able to make changes to the way that they practice and the way that they deliver care to their own patient populations as well.
Absolutely. And also I think it's been a whole new enlightening process for patients as well. I think we've all reported sort of like having dramatically reduced patient lists sort of at the beginning of the pandemic and maybe seeing the sickest people and how that has changed over time. So, you know, people's approach to self-care, mindfulness, accessing their own resources, and Johannes said we're using Accurist all the time, and the bonus is you can send people links to really helpful resources on the internet quite quickly these days, which I know we've been asking people to look at various physio resources online for exercises that you know that are a safe resource for them to use, and I've had feedback from patients coming back saying that that's really helped them, or using sort of mindfulness apps like Headspace or Calm, which have had free subscriptions and things like that for people during this time.
Yeah, I think there's something, at least for me personally, about doing remote consulting. I feel like the last couple of weeks I've started to feel a lot more confident and comfortable with it and got into the flow of it a bit more, and I'm able to have a much more normal conversation and consultation with people, even if they're not in the same room. But I think it's easier to say no to people, I think, over the phone as well. Like sometimes when someone's in the room with you, not that this is the best way to practice, but I know that everybody does it from time to time. Sometimes it's easy to give somebody a prescription for something or to offer a referral or a piece of information that you might not necessarily think they 100% might benefit from, but it's just a way to close off a conversation. This is not of anything serious, but you know, just that sometimes you do feel under a lot more pressure, I think, with somebody there. And I think it just gives you more license. The crisis itself gives you more license to say no to things. For example, actually, we could give this a bit more time to see how it develops over the coming weeks. Try these self-help things. You don't need to go straight to the referral for your physio, your MSK, or another hospital specialist. Actually, this is something we can keep an eye on. They won't be able to see you at the hospital anyway at the minute. So I think it's I think there's something around that where it might change the way that we feel around saying no on certain things as well, and give us a bit more confidence to do that from time to time. That's not always necessary, but I think there is sometimes a tendency to do that.
You're right, Anthony. So what we really need out of this is a whole new consultation model for remote consulting, which revolves around saying no, and then we can all revise for it for the AKT as well, alongside all the other consultation models that we need to.
I mean, I suppose, yeah, I completely agree with that. It's sometimes, you're right, it is easier to say, let's see things, I can book in another call in a future time, because it is easy to get through sometimes more calls than it is to see people face to face. I am missing the sort of human connection with patients, though. I think one of the nicest things about primary care, and why I really sort of enjoyed this training, is that you get to know pockets of people or groups of patients, especially if you're managing certain chronic diseases and seeing how they're getting on. And there's just something not quite the same about having a phone call. But video consultations do make up for that if and when people can use that technology. So I think that's definitely been something that's really impressed me during this pandemic, actually, the use of video consultations and being able to capture images from it, say if it's a rash or something else, so that you can keep that within the records. I mean, we've got the technology to do some really great things, I think.
Yeah. And even just sending documents or like sick notes and things to patients is just so much easier with Accurix. That, you know, they have done a really great job during all of this to help support everybody working in primary care.
And I don't know about you guys, but also it really makes me think of when I want to order tests for patients. So if I want to be doing bloods and things like that, I do really think twice, especially on what I'm ticking to test, but because you have to bring that patient in to do those bloods, whether the risk is it mitigates, you know, what may be going on otherwise with COVID and things. Whereas I'm certainly guilty of this, and I don't know about other people. If people come in, as you said, Anthony, if they want a referral or a prescription, it's similar with tests. Oh, can I just get my bloods checked as well? And you may just fall into that. So that's been a completely different thing as well, which has been interesting.
Yeah.
I think on the flip side, we're also offering patients a lot more antibiotics at the moment, though. So it'll be interesting if we can off this antibiotic dream that we're currently living in, you know, when they come to us with their chest infections next winter, and they're, you know, they're expecting to have the antibiotics that we've been throwing at them for the last few months.
Yeah. That is going to be that is going to be interesting. Yeah,
the sheer amount of papers that are going to come off the back of coronavirus is going to be shocking. But also the amount of, you know, art and literature and history that is going to come from this period of time, not just in the UK but globally as well. There's definitely going to be some sort of Oscar-nominated film in a couple of years to come about all of this, I'm sure.
Or at least some famous memes.
Yeah,
that too, yeah.
The culture of the modern day.
So obviously the four of us are working in primary care at the minute, but obviously at least 50% of GP trainees are working in secondary care jobs at the minute. And so the first of our conversations from this week's episode is with Davina Maru, who's an ST1, and Hatim sat down with her earlier this week to talk about what life has been like for her in the hospital setting.
Hi, I'm Hatim Adolfsain, and today I've got Davina Maru with me today. And Davina, do you want to just introduce yourself?
So I'm Davina, I'm ST1 working in South East London, part of the Greenwich VTS scheme, and I started GP training in August.
Perfect. And you are also a rep on the AIT committee?
Yes, so I sit on the South London faculty board and also part of the AIT community representing South London.
And how have you found your experience being an AIT rep so far?
So far, it's been very good. And especially during this coronavirus pandemic, we've had a lot of support from our chair, Anthony, too. And he's really defending us and giving us good advice about keeping us up to date with whether it's e-portfolios, whether what's going to be happening next. And he's very fighting for us. I'm really happy about that.
Amazing. And you're in the first year of your training.
Yes.
How have you found your rotation so far? And have you been redeployed at any point?
Yes. So I'll talk you through my journey. So in ST1, I have 4 monthly rotations. So I started off in psychiatry and then I started obs and gynae. I was meant to rotate in April from obs and gynae to breast surgery firm. However, 2 weeks before changeover, all was suspended. So our VTS, Wednesday, half days, our study leave, conferences, events, all were cancelled. And you know, you can spend hours organising your swaps and annual leave for your next rotation with your colleagues in the departments you haven't even met. And all of that was scrapped and we just had to stay in our rotation. Now, things changed drastically in those 2 weeks. So hospital wards were rapidly transformed as it adapted for COVID-19. ITU was extended in different areas. So my obs and gynae consultant changed our entire rota in 24 hours. She changed it into a COVID green and a COVID red zone. And allocated doctors were put on amber standby in case anyone got sick or was unable to work. So now all our rota involved all on-call shifts with bleeps, as all the outpatient clinics had stopped, except for urgent 2-week waits. And as coronavirus cases drastically increased, I was allocated on lone redeployment days. So I was assisting in ITU, helping prone patients on my redeployment days. So there's a lot of change involved, and while some departments in hospital have reduced their workload, like you said, Hatim, in A&E, it was quieter in certain times of the day, my department was still very busy. So pregnant women were still having babies, routine scan checks, miscarriages and gynecology cases continued, and complications with pregnancy and COVID just posed loads of challenges too. So that was my experience.
Amazing. That sounds like it was quite a lot to deal with. The biggest challenge of going through that?
I think the biggest challenge was stepping outside of my comfort zone and undertaking a steep learning curve, because you have to familiarise yourself in different environments, like I have to go into ITU. But I feel resilience was a huge key to this, because the healthcare system became like a battlefield. Doctors were working day and night, and ceilings of care like became the norm, and we were working all on-call shifts, which is quite strenuous on your body and really your mind as well.
Were you given enough supervision? Were you giving some training before you were redeployed?
So when we went to ITU, the anaesthetist consultants and the ITU consultants were really helpful in teaching us how to prone patients. They even shared a video with us. And what the amazing thing was going into ITU, it didn't matter what speciality you were in, didn't matter what grade you were in, everyone was there to help the patient. So all of that sort of specialty bashing, all the hierarchy was just out the window, and we all work together. So it was a really nice environment.
Talking of that, what sort of things and changes that you've seen during the way the workforce has responded to this crisis that you'd like to see stay, you know, in the future?
I think the warmth and appreciation of the public towards the NHS has been just wonderful. The sense of community has never been stronger, and thank you for everything that everyone's done, and most importantly for them staying at home as well. Simple things like our local supermarkets were giving us all a bunch of Easter eggs when we were working over the Easter bank holiday weekend, and the local school children sent us drawings and paintings titled NHS Heroes with multicoloured rainbows. And we've also got free NHS parking in the hospital car park, something that actually should have been free ages ago, to be honest. Yeah, but it's just that sense of community is just really, really nice.
And what kind of impact has it had on you in terms of your own personal well-being? How have you coped with the change in work, the change in intensity, and also probably the change in severity of the patients that you're seeing?
Mm-hmm. So I've been through various emotions, probably the whole spectrum, actually. So first I was anxious when I was seeing my first COVID patient and wondering if my PPE was actually suffice, and not knowing whether I would catch the virus and get sick during my shift. So each day you just wake up on edge. I went through sadness when I found out on my night shift, our healthcare assistant who works on our ward passed away from coronavirus, and we were just working with her last week. And her sister is in our ITU department, currently intubated. So we really must just remember these incredible NHS heroes who've passed away fighting for us. And then I went through emotions of happiness when I would Skype my family and friends. But I'm also living near a hospital now because my family are non-medical and not exposed to the hospital environment. So you really have to build that sort of resilience and mental health whilst living by yourself as well, away from family and friends.
So did you move out as soon as the crisis started, or as soon as you started to become redeployed? And did the hospital help you with that?
Yes, the hospital has been really supportive, and if you have been sick, they would move you to an accommodation and they would pay for your expenses for those 2 weeks you're isolated. And they've been really supportive. They've been like a COVID helpline in the hospital, and you inform them of your situation. So they have been supportive about that, yeah.
And you briefly mentioned PPE, and obviously I've talked about the evolution that I've seen in PPE within my own trust. How has it been for you in terms of PPE?
So I was just saying recently that we've actually started running out of scrubs, and I can't find scrubs that actually fit me, so I'm wearing extra, extra, extra large, and we're actually taping parts of our scrubs so it doesn't really fall off. So that's quite a huge issue. And
it's difficult, yeah. I know. And I think it's almost like you have to continue working whilst not being completely sure if you've got adequate PPE. Mm-hmm. Things are changing so quickly. So actually sometimes you go into the department and I find that we have everything and it's all ready and it's all there, ready to put on. And then sometimes you go there and you have to go to another place to go and find it, or you have to go into some locked door and everything's locked away. And it's a bit of a maze. And this is where we need lock picking videos that we've been talking about in our previous podcast online. So you're going to be moving into GP hopefully in August if there's no change with that. Are you looking forward to that?
Exactly. I'm so excited to start GP in August, and it's a 6-month GP placement and it's ITP, so it's integrated community peds. But I think with this whole pandemic and seeing huge technological advances with video and telephone consultations, I think it's a really exciting time to be training in GP now, and I'll learn all these new skills when I start in August. And yeah, it's actually exciting times.
What impact do you think this whole experience will have on your future career plans as a GP?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Well, I think remote consultations will start becoming the norm. And
yeah, I think that I think remote consultations is a big thing, and we don't really get a lot of training and teaching on it. So that is one area where we'll need to all be a lot more comfortable. And I think there's a lot more coming into play. I know our VTS, our training program director, has started to do some videos and tips on how to consult remotely. And there's been a lot of things that have been put out there by HE and by RCGP. So it's starting to happen now, which is great. And that is definitely one area where practice is going to change massively.
Yes.
Okay. And
hopefully get to do my AKT next year. Hopefully the extra dates, so new ST2s and those unable to sit the exam this year can all sit it. So that'll be an exciting time to start doing my actual MRCGP.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure you'll do great, and you'll really enjoy your GP rotation. I think you'll take a lot out of this from the time you probably spent in ITU and in Obs and Gynae. Obviously, a lot of it is very secondary care, but there's probably a lot of skills that you'll take from it that you'll actually be able to use with patients in the community as well. Is there anything that you wanted to add, Davina? Is there anything you still want to talk about today?
Yeah, actually, I want to mention that there was a quote that resonated with me. So a stranger on social media commented one of my posts, "Not all heroes wear capes." And I think that's really beautiful and really sums up everyone's efforts during this pandemic. I thought that was a really nice quote.
That's really lovely. And it has been nice how a lot of friends, a lot of family, a lot of people in the community have just been so supportive and so, like you said, appreciative of the work that's being done by the NHS at this time. And actually, it's been it feels like it's been a long time coming that, you know, the work we do has been really appreciated, and it's helped, well, I think, well-being and morale of the NHS as a whole.
Yeah.
Great. It was wonderful speaking to you, Davina, and I hope we can catch up with you again soon on the podcast. I'm glad that you've been listening and enjoying it. If you could just put a little message out there to others, other SD1s, just to say something to have a listen and keep listening to our podcast.
Okay, thanks for having me, everyone. And really just keep your resilience, and we're all going to get through this, and it will soon be over.
So that was great, Hatim. Thanks for speaking to Davina. I say the two of you spoke about a few really interesting things. For me, there was a really couple of nice reflections, obviously talking about working as part of a new team and how that had dissolved a lot of the hierarchies that had existed in the hospital before, and people coming together. That was really nice. Obviously the really tragic story about the healthcare assistant that she'd been working with who sadly passed away from COVID. And then also some reflections on her personal experience, thinking about living alone and how to kind of look after her own mental health and well-being in that situation. And then also the issue of exams, and actually it's not just something that's impacting on ST3s, but cancellations or postponements of exams is an anxiety and a worry for lots of people at different stages to their training as well.
Yeah, it was really interesting actually to sit down with Davina, especially because as an ST1, she's very much at the start of her journey as a GP trainee. And I guess one of the advantages of being a GP is we are meant to be quite adaptable and be able to sort of change course quite quickly. And obviously that's something that she's had to do during her obs and gynae rotation, where she was meant to be picking up skills relevant to obstetrics and gynecology that would be relevant to general practice. But she's moved into quite a significant secondary care role in ITU, which is very different to the role that she'll be doing in the future as a GP. And so for her, reflecting on that, having that conversation with her was great. And just to see how she's sort of maturely handled that change and adapted, and also what she's done to sort of support her mental health during this time was actually really interesting to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as an ST1 myself, it's nice to hear the experiences sort of that are affecting colleagues who are working differently and all across sort of different parts of London and the UK, which I suppose nicely brings us to the next conversation that I had with a former university colleague of mine who is now working in her first year as a salaried GP up in the Northeast. So to everyone, a big hello from me and from Natasha. She's waving, although you can't see. As we've talked in previous episodes, we are really conscious of the fact that all the hosts are from London training schemes and are associates in training. And we just kind of wanted to get a bit of a flavour of what's happening across the nation, not only for trainees, but maybe for those who've also started becoming a GP in their first year or first 5 years. So I thought there would be no better addition than a good friend of mine, Natasha, but I'll leave the introductions up to her. Natasha, tell us who you are and what's going on with you.
Thanks, Mira. Thanks for asking me to talk about this. So yeah, I qualified last September or last August, whenever CCT ended. So I work in Durham. I did the GP training scheme for the North East and Cumbria, working in the Northumbria region, which is like north of kind of probably Durham up to Northumberland, working primarily in Sunderland and Durham for GP, and I loved it. I thought it was a great training program. And now I am a salaried doctor for a practice in Durham, which is about 11,000 patients, made up of three partners and five salaried doctors.
Well, first of all, I've got to say, although it is a bit late and we have celebrated before, but congratulations on being, you know, a fully fledged GP. That's a big, big, you know, achievement. But I suppose the thing that I really wanted to know about, Tasha, is now working as a salary GP, how this sort of current climate of COVID has affected your work, or has it changed the way in which your surgery is operating at all?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, it's almost completely changed our appointment system and how we work. So obviously, when prior to sort of lockdown started, my surgery were reasonably proactive in how they ran things. So we moved from absolutely no telephone triage to complete telephone triage, which is what we're doing now. In fact, we all do that every morning. And then we have an on-call doctor then to mop up the rest of it throughout the day. And I think that's a change that everyone managed really, really, really quickly. And I think without this situation, it would have taken months, maybe even a year, to actually implement that strategy into the practice. So that's a positive thing. And I think the patients are now getting used to that, because I think that was a bit of a shock for them. And then we've also set up some hub work with one of the other surgeries where we're seeing our...
Oh, Tasha, you have...
daily into it.
You cut out a little bit then, but that's okay. Because I'll jump in. It's fine. Or what I'll say is, yeah, you were talking about telephone triage and all that, which obviously is really new for a lot of patients and getting used to that system. But also how we've talked about this before in the podcast, about how we're adopting technology far more readily than we had previously. And although it may have been the crisis that set that off, that's probably quite a positive thing within primary care. But I think just before you cut out, you were talking about setting up a hub. Do you want to tell me what how's that working?
So that's us and another practice that works in the area that are using a singular site, which we see all of our patients that are hot patients as such. And one doctor from each practice will run that a day. So for example, that's what I'm doing tomorrow. I'll be there from 8:30 till 6. Each surgery is put on the patients that they want with COVID symptoms. And then I will double triage that and then decide whether I want to see them or not. But we've been doing a lot of stuff like sats in the car park, walking people up and down in the car park. They seem to work really well. And you were talking about technology, and obviously now we have like video consulting a lot. We're using AccuRx software for that, for video consulting, texting out sick notes, all of that kind of stuff. So yeah, it is a lot of changes that we just literally didn't have before, because we used to write to a lot of patients.
Yeah, absolutely. And it kind of shows the difference between posting all the shielding letters, and I'm sure you've had patients talking
about that. Oh, don't talk about shielding.
Yeah, we might not open that can of worms just yet. But I guess also, if you're working in these hubs, a question that is pertinent at the moment is, how are you feeling in terms of PPE provision and all of that? How is that going for you?
Yeah, I mean, we have adequate PPE. We've actually had a lot provided by schools. So
Great.
Had like safety glasses, you know, from like science labs donated. Yeah. A local school has made us visors. Another school's made us bags to put scrubs in. So, I mean, we have enough. Whether or not without them, would we have managed? I think we probably would have we seem to be have been using our PP quite sensibly. We didn't use it a lot in the beginning, so we seem to have a reasonable amount left. So, I mean, I'm pretty happy with that. The difficulty is, I think, and I'm sure most people find this, is in home visiting. PP in home visiting is near on impossible to do in a sensible and safe way. We're trying to manage that with boxes, clean box and a dirty box.
Right, okay. How is that going?
Best that you can do, as long as you can, you try and clean your stuff, leave it when you're done. You know, it's a learning experience and it takes a bit of time to actually, you know, sort it out, but that's about as best as you can.
Yeah, and I think the good thing that I'm hearing definitely is that there's lots of communities coming together to help out. So like you say, the local school's helping you out, the local school college is helping sort of the partners at my surgery out with visors and equipment. And whether or not we get sufficient PP or not is obviously going to be a worry for a lot of people out there, but it's reassuring to know that further afield, people are just sort of pulling together to kind of make things work.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I suppose a lot of people who are coming up into the ST3 year, it is a bit of a worrying time at the moment because the exams have been delayed and cancelled and things, and you're one of the lucky ones that was a year ahead of all of this. do you sort of have any words of wisdom for those that are kind of in this lockdown at the moment?
I think they'll still be absolutely invariably helpful to the practice that they're at. I know I'm sure my ST, where I worked in ST3, will be finding their registrars really helpful in terms of doing it. And just because you're not sitting the exam, I don't think, certainly being an ST3 is not that far away from being a salaried or a fully qualified doctor, so you'll still they'll still be of great help. I don't think, although the exams are really important and it's what you focus your time, life, surgeries, practicing on, I think at the moment that's just not in the forefront of people's minds, and I think definitely you are valuable in practice at the moment. I would personally say, I know my ST3 practice are still using their trainees well.
Definitely, and I think this is something we touched upon on our last episode, was that at the moment it does feel like a big onslaught is within secondary care, so there are a lot of people in primary care that maybe feel that they're not as valuable or as contributing to the to the frontline effort, as it were. But a lot of us just don't think that's the case. I think there's time and a place for everyone to play a vital role in that, and clearly you're part of all of that as well, Tasha. I guess the thing moving on from all of that, from sort of how working is going, is general lockdown. How have you been coping with that?
Well, so if I didn't go to work, I probably wouldn't see physically anybody. But I'm lucky. I live in a nice area, have good access to like nice places to walk, exercise, run, things like that. I've been doing some painting in the house, jigsaws, and also just stuff like this, Zoom chats, house parties. I think it's actually really nice how probably better that I am connecting with people and friends and my parents, and stuff like that. So actually, although, yeah, it's not ideal, I can't go out for a nice meal or a drink, but I have to say I'm not too bothered by it. It's probably, I think work certainly keeps me going when I'm there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and this has been said before, hasn't it, is that having a bit of a routine, we're in a stressful time, having that routine of being able to leave the house and see people and obviously hopefully be useful and helpful and do all of that is also quite good for our own mental health as well. Although, you know, we recognise it can be a really stressful time for a lot of people and quite a lot of anxiety, certainly for me, and I think for you, Tasha, like going to work every day has been a big help.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, having a routine really helps. And you know, when you're at work, you don't worry about, you know, when I'm at work, I don't worry about what's happening outside of there. It's just focusing on the task in hand of the day. And especially, I do an on-call every Thursday. And certainly when I'm there those days, I'll literally not do anything else until I leave work at, you know, after 6, and then that's it.
No, absolutely. Well, no, thank you so much for chatting to me, Natasha, just about everything that's been going on with you. Is there any sort of last thoughts you've had about life in Corona, working as a GP in Corona times, or anything that you think we'll look back on in the future and look back now and think, oh my gosh, I can't believe we kind of lived like that?
I was talking to one of the partners. It was meant to be my delayed 6-month appraisal about a month ago, which was then about 7 or 8 months after it. And he said, I'm really sorry, Natasha, this has happened in your first year of being a GP. And I said, well, it's not like it was your fault, but I'm sure we will never see anything like this again, or I really hope that's the case. And certainly, I think even if this hadn't happened, I would still be feeling all of the anxiety and the worry about being a newly qualified. And a lot of that is just worry that you, a lot of uncertainty, how you're managing, you're now managing things a lot more alone. But I think the same with anything, as long as you have a good support network, plenty of people to ask, I certainly do where I work, then it makes it much easier. And that's even saying with this, when this is these weird uncertain times, you know, things are changing in our practice almost day to day, and you know, if we didn't have each other to ask or bounce off with, it would be so much harder. So I'm lucky in terms of that, and I'm well supported, so you know, it's not bad.
That's good. As always, Natasha ends this with a big smile on her face, which you guys can't see, but I can, so I'm really grateful for that. But thanks a lot, Tasha, and we look forward to hearing a bit more about this from other trainees, wherever you may be. Please do get in touch. We'd love to hear what's going on, where you are, whether you are in training or in the first 5 years of practice.
Thanks, Mira.
Great. So it was lovely to hear you and Natasha get a chance to catch up, Mira. I also got to listen to the unedited version, so there was some footage at either end of that interview that didn't make the final cut. But I guess, I think it's a really interesting thing to think about. GPs who've recently qualified and entered the workplace to then suddenly see such a massive change is actually potentially even more scary and intimidating than it is for trainees, who at least are in a much more supported environment and can be kind of assisted and supported to learn about all these new ways of working, using different tools than our first five colleagues might get access to. So it was really interesting to hear her reflections. Also interesting to kind of think about someone working in a more rural area as well. So we were talking before this about things that we'd really like to travel. I'd love to be in the countryside going for nice walks. That sounds pretty dreamy at the minute. So it's nice to hear that people are having some positive experiences and getting a different routine and flow to what their normal lives might look like.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was a bit of unedited content in there that Anthony's probably heard. It's nice to catch up with old friends who have been through the system, understand how difficult it must be now for trainees with the uncertainty that's going on, but also being kind of positive and hopeful about a career that they've now entered into that workforce and are able to work in this environment relatively, you know, quite successfully. I think another interesting thing about it as well is, you know, whilst working as a doctor, how your own family and everybody else can be impacted. So some of Natasha's family are in that shielding group, and how that can be sometimes sort of difficult to manage and worry about people around you as well. So yeah, really interesting to hear it from the perspective of someone who's got through that side of training and is in the working world now.
And in our first regional accent of the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I've lost mine from being up north.
The first of many, I'm sure. Great. And I guess it was also kind of thinking, she's referenced some stuff that we've already spoken about in this week's episode around new ways of working and the fact that this whole process has accelerated change in general practice. So things that would normally have taken 1, 2, 3, 5, 10, who knows how many years to properly implement have rapidly been utilized in just a few weeks. And I guess, as Johannes said earlier, it will just be important to reflect back on those things once this is all over and keep what we think is the best and really useful. And so I think it was just nice to hear somebody else who's a little bit further ahead in their career than we all are, but still having the same reflections and same experiences that we've already kind of been discussing and reflecting on as well.
Absolutely. And I think we have all said it would be really nice to hear from, you know, other people, trainees and people maybe in the first 5 years post CCT, just hearing about their experiences as well. So we really do hope to bring you more sort of segments and sections like this in future episodes as well. So if you are interested, please do contact us.
Yeah, and as the situation around exams becomes a little bit clearer, and hopefully we'll be able to discuss that in a bit more detail in the next episode of the podcast, so stay tuned for that expose. But yeah, I think once, as hopefully that situation gets sorted and people move closer towards CCT, it will be good for us to do some episodes of the podcast around life after training, giving people access to and insight into different opportunities that people have taken on once they've finished their training in their first few years.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've gone through nice long lists of ideas that we've all had. You remember those days back when we could actually all meet without socially distancing and in Nando's come up with lists. So that was a nice time, wasn't it? But in the future, being able to sort of make more of the things that we all have an interest in, but also what everybody else also has an interest in as well.
Yeah, I think having an opportunity to actually put a COVID lens on a lot of the things that we were talking about beforehand, like digital primary care, like climate change, all of these factors will be really interesting. So I look forward to being able to have those discussions in the future and hearing from those of you that want to get in touch about these things.
Yeah, and as always, remember that you can get in touch via the podcast email address, which is ait.chair@rcgp.org.uk, or you can drop us a line on Twitter. I'm at Dr. Anthony James.
I'm at Dr. Mira Kumar.
I'm at Dr. _ Hats.
And I actually do have a Twitter, but I remembered that I'd made one years ago. I will dig out the tag for next time.
We'll make sure he's got one for next week.
Yeah.
And I also did register an RCGP TikTok handle. So if we do want to make that come that dream become a reality in the near future, then we can do that as well.
We also know that producer Bryn really wants us to make a trailer, so it may be sooner than we think.
So to close out this week's episode of the podcast, we're going to play you another video, which is a song based around COVID-19, but parodying These Are a Few of My Favorite Things, the famous Sound of Music song. So we are going to head out with that.
Why do we stay here?
Well, this virus is really quite a problem, and it's making people sick.
The virus must be nasty.
Yes, really.
I want to go out. I'm so lonely. It makes me want to cry.
Well now, if anything bothers me and I'm feeling unhappy, I just try to think of nice things.
What kind of things?
Oh, well, let me see. Nice things. Lazy days. No work clothes. Nice stocked-up bar. Watching old movies. And raiding the kitchen.
Browsing online, I can fuel my addiction. Staying in bed, having no alarms ring. Nothing to do, it's my favorite thing. Who can be lonely with Netflix? There's oodles. Stuffing my face with chips, lollies and noodles. Wild parties, singing and living like kings. Being in lockdown is my favorite thing. Playing Grand Theft Auto with guns and car crashes. Not doing makeup or curling eyelashes. We hate Corona with all that it brings. But staying at home is my favourite thing. Blazing long nights, days not working. Home is not too bad. I simply do all of my favourite things. And then I don't feel so.
Use your elbow. At least he's not coughing.
Food stops and doses and dressing gown fashion. Hours of keeping up with the Kardashians. Using house party and having a fling. Self-isolation, my favourite thing. Not caring whether it's Monday or Friday. Every day's special cause every day's my day. Not shaving my legs, not curling my hair. Showers, who needs them? I don't have to care. Stuff getting dressed, I'm staying in my pyjamas. Happily laughing at old workplace dramas. We need a vaccine as soon as can be. But until then, this is perfect for me. Lazy long night.
Yikes.
Yeah, it's 2 meters away.
And I should just say that that video came from Shirley Serban's YouTube channel, who does a lot of other parodies as well. So check that out for more.
Yeah, for a little bit of lighthearted entertainment, I had to unmute myself then. Bryn will have fun editing that bit.
Well, yeah, I think that's a good way to end. I hope that it's nearly the weekend, so I hope everyone gets to do at least some of their favourite things, whether that's lying in bed or doing anything else. So, yeah, until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you again for another episode of Somewhere in Between.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Yeah, so we can either do a recording on Zoom, which is two separate videos, and Bryn just puts them together as a TikTok or something. I don't know how it works.
Yeah.
I know I actually use TikTok. You two have, so.
Yeah, it'll be fine. I'm game.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, let's do that. Yeah.
Johannes just has to go by majority.
I'm just going to keep pulling this face until it happens.